The following is a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.
As we've discussed day after day after day, if you're as old as I am, you remember a movie called The Graduate, and you'll never forget the word plastic. Remember that, Peggy?
Yes.
By the pull, plastics. Okay. And by the way, if we had invested in plastics back then, we wouldn't be sitting here, maybe. But in replacing the word plastics, we have the word oil. Because every time you turn around, when anything happens to the market, mm-hmm. whether or not it goes up, whether or not it goes down, good days, bad days, it's always either blamed or attributed to oil. So we needed to find an oil expert. And we were reading a really great article the other day by a gentleman named Phil Flynn. And I thought, this would be great if we could get Phil Flynn on. And lo and behold, Peggy does her magic. And we have with us today Mr. Phil Flynn. Phil is senior energy analyst at the Price Futures Group and a Fox Business contributor. In fact, he's on all the time with Fox. And he is considered one of the world's leading market analysts. And we are really fortunate to have today Mr. Phil Flynn. Good morning, sir.
Hey, good morning, guys. How are you?
We're great, thank you. By the way, you're a great writer. I've been reading. I picked up one of your articles, I guess a couple weeks ago, and read it. I've been following you now. You are a very good writer. I just want to tell you that. I really think
you.
I think you're a great writer.
Would you tell my high school teacher that? Because I have a lot of teeth. My grammar is not always the best. But thank you. That's a nice compliment.
Yeah, well, I will.
It's hard to get that out every day. So I write every day.
It must be. Because you're amazing content that you write. I don't really know where to start with this oil thing because there's so much out there. Mm-hmm. But I think I'm going to start with a conversation. I'm going to start with a conversation I had yesterday with the CFO here in Houston of a small to medium sized oil company. He threw something out to me that was kind of a surprise to me. We were talking about the situation with oil and about the oversupply and how much was it Cushing and all this kind of stuff. And he made this comment. Of course, we're broadcasting now out of Texas, and we have what's called the Texas Railroad Commission, which I know you're familiar with. And he was talking to me about how that had surprised him. The other day he had discovered that the numbers from the IEA were different about Texas production than from the Texas Railroad Commission. Now, down here in Texas, we pretty much believe everything Texas. And we kind of believe in the Railroad Commission's numbers. And he says, the Railroad Commission's numbers are 500,000 barrels less than the numbers that are being thrown out there by the IEA. So I guess what I'm asking you, in a way, are the numbers credible that we hear all the time? Because this morning I'm reading two or three articles in which the IEA is either credited or discussed in those articles. Are we getting good information on oil and gas?
I think it's very difficult for the Energy Information Administration to get the correct data all the time. And I agree with the Texas Railroad Commission. I think production is falling a lot more than is showing up in this big report. And I think part of the problem is the way that the Energy Information Administration has to gather data, not only on Texas oil production, but just about everything. I mean, it's unbelievable all the amount of content of information that they have. And I think that they lag behind. I think by the time they get all the information, they're running behind. My sense, and to the people I'm talking to on the ground, is that production is starting to fall. And it just would make sense. I mean, if you look at the drop in rig counts, natural gas rig counts at the lowest in history, you look at the continuing drop in oil rig counts, you gotta know that production has just gotta fall at some point. You can only squeeze so much blood out of a turnip, and if you quit perking, drilling into the turnip, you're gonna get less oil.
Yeah, and I agree, and thank you, because it's good to hear that, because he was quite serious, and that's the first time I had heard that before. Now, there were two interesting headlines out today. One said falling oil prices will bankrupt the likes of Russia and Saudi Arabia. And then the other one turned around, and both of them were at MarketWatch, and said cheap oil may trigger a new era of OPEC dominance. So on one hand, I've got Saudi Arabia possibly going bankrupt. On the other hand, I've got them coming back to into the same level of dominance that they had during the 1970s, for instance. I guess I'll take the first one. Obviously, the low price of crude is really hurting a lot of countries. You've got the oil minister of Venezuela basically go around and begging just for a meeting. What are your thoughts on that? Or is this really going to continue to place pressure on these countries?
I think you hit the nail on the head and why the global economy is so confused about how to take these low energy prices, because the market, you know, you don't know how to take it. There is no doubt that Saudi Arabia, with these low oil prices, are burning through their foreign exchange reserves and their cash reserves at a pace that has been unprecedented in the country of Saudi Arabia. You know, the question is, you know, they have pretty large reserves. We saw one estimate from the World Bank that if Saudi Arabia, if things didn't change and Saudi Arabia kept spending money that the way that they were spending money, that they would be bankrupt, basically, in 5 years. But, you know, when you get those kind of projections, you have to put it into context of, you know, what's happening in the rest of the globe. And what's happening in the rest of the globe is that everybody's in debt up to their eyeballs. Everybody's losing money on this energy thing. And the Saudis have more staying power than, you know, a country like Venezuela. So, you know, today, if you look at what's happening Iran today, the Iranian oil minister, they said, hey, you know, maybe we will talk with Saudi Arabia about cutting production. But it is this double-edged story right now. You mentioned OPEC dominance coming back. Well, that's what Saudi Arabia is trying to do. They're trying to show that they're still the big producer in town. They started this price war, and they're going to finish it, you know. And if they're going to go down, they're going to bring everybody down with it. And that's been their attitude. It's like, listen, we can probably withstand this price war better than anybody else. There's going to be a lot of pain and a lot of casualties, but at the end of the day, we're going to be the last one standing. They wanted to bring down Russia. They wanted to bring down the U.S. shale producer. You know, they think they can outlast them, but it's, you know, like I say, if prices don't stabilize pretty soon, even Saudi Arabia will be out of money.
Do you think that, in your personal opinion, do you think that Saudi Arabia will blink here?
I think that Saudi Arabia I don't know if blink's the right word, but they may get into a point where they'll be willing to engineer some type of stability in the market. You know, when you get, you know, they're the biggest bugaboo with Saudi Arabia way back in the beginning, before they started the production war, was to get non-OPEC producers to join into a production cut. And when Russia basically came and said, yeah, we'll cut at some point in the future, the Saudis said that's not good enough for them. So there's that lack of trust here. You know, the Saudis don't want to go in there and engineer a production cut only to have other producers take their market share.
Right.
So my feeling is, though, but when you get these prices down at these levels, when we're seeing this kind of pain in the market, the Saudis at some point will talk and they will try to get some type of a deal done.
Okay. All right. I tell you what, Phil, if you could just hang on when we come back, I'd like to talk to you about a couple things in some of your articles, one of which is Iran's desire to take euros instead of dollars, which I thought was very interesting. We'll get just a few moments, folks. We've got Phil Flynn with us, and we're talking oil today. Stay with us. You're listening to Straight Talk Money.
The following is a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.
We are fortunate today with us to have Mr. Phil Flynn. Phil is Senior Energy Analyst at the Price Futures Group and a Fox Business Network contributor. He's considered one of the leading market analysts in the oil sector. And, Phil, before we get started, let's talk a little bit just about futures in general. That's an area that a lot of portfolios don't have exposure to right now because, you know, frankly, the broad-based futures have been pretty lackluster for a while, but that may be turning. Anyway, let's talk about the Price Futures Group, because how do people, first of all, how do people get a hold of you and listen and get in contact with what you're writing every day?
Sure. Well, yeah, I do a daily energy report. It's picked up by a lot of different outlets. You can sign up for that by calling me at 888-264-5665. Or probably the best way is just shoot me an email at pflynn@pricegroup.com. But, you know, Price Futures Group has been around since the 1980s. You know, we handle customers, large and small, institutionals. And actually, the Price Group is if you've ever heard of the Jim Rogers Fund and the Jim Rogers Yes. Mutual Fund, we do the hard work. Jim gives us the ideas of what to do, and we actually do the hard stuff. Don't tell Jim I said that.
I was going to say.
He listens to the show,
yeah,
Phil.
He's been on the show. Can I quote you on that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Don't tell him I said that. Okay.
All right.
I just lost my ticket to China now.
Yeah, there you go.
I'm invited to the party. But anyway, so we handle a lot of that. But I'll tell you, it is interesting when you talk about commodities as an asset class. Never before in the history of commodities have we been so out of step with the stock market. You know, for the first time probably in history, you know, the broad-based assets of commodities have gone in different directions. You know, stocks were going straight up until this year. You know, year after year after year, they were up for like 3 years. But commodities were going the other way. At some point, you have to ask the question, if the economy is doing so good, wouldn't we be using more commodities? Wouldn't there be more demand for these commodities? But it's been the opposite. What we've seen is that we've got a glut of commodities. There's concerns about demand. And that could be a situation that's very worrisome for the global economy. You know, remember the narrative, hey, low oil prices are always good for the economy and high prices are always bad for the economy. Well, that doesn't seem to be the case right now. I mean, why is everybody so afraid of sub $2 a gallon gasoline? It's because the reality of the situation is that this weakness in the energy complex is really signaling weakness in growth and maybe calling into question some of the valuations of some of the stock market. And I think that's why I think we have to be very careful going forward, you know, to be too overjoyous about $2 a gallon gasoline.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, there's two sides of a coin, and when you're getting something really inexpensive like that, somebody's paying the price on the other end. Let's talk about the politics of oil, because certainly many people have just come right out and said where oil is trading right now is more of a political thing than it is a supply and demand thing. I won't get into that right now, but I am interested in a piece of a column that you wrote several days ago, and which seemed to indicate that Iran, now that they've had the shackles taken off by President Obama, doesn't want our dollars anymore. They want to be paid in euros. What kind of impact will that have?
That's crazy. I mean, you know, this has happened before. You know, Saddam Hussein, one of the things he wanted to do before he was toppled was to not accept U.S. dollars. You know, they think it's like an insult to the United States if they don't accept their currency. And then it also happened again. Giselle, the supermodel, she wanted to be paid in euros. And that was the top of the euro market, by the way. I don't know if you knew that. So after that, the financial crisis began. So, you know, the track record of people saying that, you know, the world's reserve currency for oil shouldn't be dollars, you know, I think Iran is just trying to slap the face of the Obama administration a little bit. But at the end of the day, what we've found is that the market keeps going back to the dollar as the world's reserve currency because it has a track record. It's one of the longest in place. And you know, I remember the beginning of the financial crisis, Mike. In the beginning, when the housing crisis started to unravel, everybody thought that Europe and China had decoupled from the United States. Do you remember that?
Uh-huh. Yes, I do.
You know, and everybody was saying, oh, you know, the late great United States, who cares about that? You know, get your money out of the United States. That housing crisis is their problem. It's not the world's problem. And then everybody wanted to buy European bonds. You know, get my money out of the U.S. banks. Buy some Greek bonds, right? You know, and But you know, it turned out, of course, that the European economy wasn't the way to be, and that they were, then everybody went back to the dollar. So I just think it's more politics and a slap at the Obama administration, which they continue to do even after the Obama administration did everything they could to lift the sanctions on this country.
Wow. So the next question I've got to ask is the $10 gas gallon tax. I just have to ask.
And you actually wrote something on that,
Yeah, you wrote something on this. And when that came out, that literally drove me crazy.
And I saw yesterday that he wants to even up it to more than $10.
I don't know if he's playing to his base or, he must really despise the U.S. energy industry.
He must.
And what bothers me about President Obama, remember, this is the president that told us, 4 years ago or 8 years ago that we couldn't drill ourselves to energy independence.
Which
we needed to quit using oil, forget about it, it's a dead deal. And then, of course, we started to drill our way to independence. Then after we started to have the shale gas revolution and it changed the world, then he tried to take credit for it. He goes, well, look at all the production that went up under my watch. And it's like, you can't have it both ways. The $10 a barrel tax is just an excuse for a failed energy policy. And anybody that looks at President Obama, he's been wrong on energy every step of the way. You know, when it's come to the shale gas revolution, when it's talked about drilling, and he's spent billions of dollars investing in green energy projects that, let's face it, won't be competitive with oil at $25 a barrel. And the only way he can make his vision of a green energy future come true is to put on a tax on the energy. But what he doesn't realize is the energy companies aren't going to pay the taxes. We're going to be paying the taxes. And we've got an energy industry in this country that he could bankrupt with this tax, and he's going to make us more reliant on countries that we don't like. So it's a real difficult situation.
All right, got less than a minute. Time for predictions. When do you think that the oil market will bottom out? I'm not asking you when it's going to turn and go back up again. Do you see a bottom coming this year? Bob Dudley, British Petroleum, thinks it will bottom out sometime in the second half of this year and begin to bottom out in the first half and begin to rebalance in the second.
All right, now I'm full disclosure here. I think that basically, we're at a bottom. And we might have one more washout here, but I would expect that, I don't expect us to hit $25 a barrel. I know we're very close, and I think we can start
From your lips to God's ears, thank you so much, Phil, for being with us today. We look forward to having you back. Thank you, sir.
You have been listening to a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.